It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 326, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Vegas is calling BYU's season at 5.5 wins, and Matt and I debate that over-under. And if BYU wins less than 6 games, how hot will Kalani Sitake's seat be? Also on this week's show, BYU's QB carousel, the most accurate passers in BYU history, and determining the intensity of the BYU-Utah rivalry. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Join us on Instagram at BYU_RiseShout and listen to Matt and I right now. Matt, it's time to rise and shout, my brother.
Yes, yes, it is.
So, the hot dog thing won't die. And by the way, we've gotten a new definition of hot dog, which is actually there has to be 2 pieces of bread. So you lose, I win. Done. All right, moving on.
No, that definition's not definitive.
It is definitive. And it's in Webster's.
And we've already covered that. Webster. What is this? That wasn't even Webster's. It was some online dictionary.
Webster's is online, by the way. All dictionaries are online now. Thanks.
Your face is online. Okay.
My face is online quite a bit, unfortunately, for
internet. No, we're not just going to blindly follow what's in Webster's dictionary to make a decision here about whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich. That's insanity.
It's not a sandwich.
Whatever.
That's what the dictionary said. And by the way, if you did not get a chance to listen to the podcast last week, you will hear other arguments about hot dogs and sandwiches, but you'll also get to hear Ryan Teeples talk about the sustainability of independence. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that interview I did with Ryan last week, I would go back and listen to that after you get finished listening to this wonderful episode.
It's a great listen, actually. I mean, because that is, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what do we talk about at this part in the season and this, but that is a hot topic, very well thought out. Anyway, it's just a great listen.
Yeah, it's a great listen. He did a couple of really good stories for ESPN 960 there in Utah. All right, so Justin Sweeney has our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
He says, when is Matt Mangum next marathon? When is his next marathon? And which is greater, the number of torchy tacos Matt can eat or the number of hours it would take Adam to run a marathon, hashtag tweetback. So Matt, you of course last year chronicled on this show quite a bit about your running as you were preparing for the New York Marathon. Any desire to give an update today about your next
So some people may be aware that I did run in March the Woodlands Marathon in Woodlands, Texas. And I'm currently registered to run the Chicago Marathon the first weekend in October this year. And then that will likely be followed up by the Houston Marathon in February the next year. But there's a bunch of other races I'm going to sprinkle in there, probably a half or two between now and October. And I'm playing with the idea of running San Antonio Rock and Roll Marathon in December. So that's what's going on in the running.
What is the Rock and Roll Marathon?
So it's basically a franchised set of marathons. They do them in cities all over the world. But what's the phrase I want to use? Their shtick is that they get bands at like every mile marker. Our brother Sam ran the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Washington, D.C. a few months ago. So they have music at like every mile marker or something, and it's all live bands, and it's very much a party atmosphere. And it is in some cities in the United States, they are the main sponsor of the big marathon in that city. They do it in New Orleans, as you might imagine, is a pretty popular event.
And people then still finish the race, though. They don't get distracted by the party.
No. Well, I don't know about in New Orleans. In the other cities, people finish the race. But I will tell you, I ran a 10K in New Orleans a few weeks ago, and I have never been around that many drunk people in a starting corral.
Oh,
nice. At like 6 o'clock in the morning. I had never seen anything like it. There were a 10K is 6.2 miles. I think there were 3 major beer stops.
Wow.
It was one of the craziest. It was a fun race, but anyway. So, but as far as my running goes, that's where that is. Now, I'm not doing any of these. You know, I think we chronicled last year. I was raising some money to get in to with the New York City Marathon, and I'm no longer doing any of that. But I'm still chronicling some of my running journey on Instagram. If people want to follow that,
All right. Excellent. And by the way, you'd have to eat infinite tacos to say how long it would take for me to run a marathon. But more realistically, how long do you think someone who has not trained, if they physically don't, like, give out, it would take to do a marathon?
Oh, I don't. I'm not even sure. I could beat you then.
10 hours? 12? I mean, I don't know what it would take. I mean, if you did a 30-minute mile pace, what is that? 10 hours, right?
Oh, this is going to take you 13 hours.
13. Yeah, right. So 13 hours. So could you do 13 tacos? If I set the over-under at 12 and a half, could you do 13?
If I do a pretty solid workout the morning of, I have been to Torchy's, eaten two tacos and an entire serving of queso and a bowl of chips by myself and not even put a dent in the hunger beast. So, you know, if I did a nice long run, say I even ran a marathon that morning, could I put down 13
Torchy's tacos? We're not talking about, like, you know, I'd give it to you easy if we're talking like Taco Bell hard shell, right?
Oh yeah, that's, come on.
I mean, that's easy. Actually,
I wouldn't
right
get
now
through 13. I would that swill. That, I mean.
Oh, stop it! Don't insult the
I haven't been to Taco Bell in a long time. My last trip to Taco Bell was with my son on Halloween a couple years ago. It was hilarious. It was like 11:30 at night. He was in like third grade. I'm completely irresponsible, but I'm 13.
Call it good parenting.
13's a tall order.
That's a lot of Torchy's tacos.
That is a lot of Torchy's.
You would not feel good the next day.
No, but I think I could power through it.
All right. There we have it.
Well, there's only one way to settle this.
I need to run a marathon cold, and you need to, and then you have to eat that many tacos?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that's a terrible.
You know, one of the greatest marathons in the continental U.S. is the Twin Cities Marathon. It's run, I believe, in October.
Yes, it is.
It's a beautiful course. It's a flat course. It's extremely popular.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'll
one of these years I'm
going to
come
on
up and see you. One of these years I'm going to make a trip up and see you and run that thing.
No, yeah, you're free to stay on our couch. It's very nice down in the basement. So Don asked us a question and said, "Solo, a Star Wars story, better than The Last Jedi. Discuss." Matt, did you see Solo, a Star Wars story?
I am ill prepared to have this conversation.
Okay,
I have
so we
not
won't have
seen
the conversation,
Solo.
But this is a great time for me to plug my other podcast, Bleep the Podcast, because our brother Sam and I talk about that very question in this most recent podcast, which will be probably posted shortly after this part, within 24 hours of when this podcast hits. It's not out there yet, but it will be. So stay tuned and listen to Sam and I talk about that. Well, Matt, let's go to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, there are BYU players in the NFL. I don't know if you knew this, but as of right now, 18.
Vaguely aware of that.
18 of them. We're not going to go through all of them today, but... you know, there was an article in the Deseret News with all of the Utah connections. They kind of do this throughout the season. It was Brandon Judd's article. We, of course, Kai Nakua got cut, but then signed by the Ravens. I think did we talk about that before on the show? I think that happened while we were on hiatus.
Oh, I thought we had mentioned it, but I think maybe you're right.
We might have mentioned it. That's true. And I'm trying to think, Dondre Wesley signed a reserve future contract with the Bills. You and I talked about that before, but it's worth mentioning because it's a little new and different. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else here of note. Micah Hanneman, defensive back, you know, with Cleveland. We talked about that. He just took Kai Nakua's spot. Is that right? I mean, they just traded. They needed a BYU guy on their roster. So
who doesn't need a BYU guy?
Everybody should have one. And you might have heard Ziggy Ansah. He's going to be making $17 million a year this year.
Hey, did you know that before he came to BYU, Ziggy Ansah had never played football?
No. Yeah. Let me guess. He had never put on somebody had to help him put on the shoulder pads the first time.
He put them on backwards or inside out or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Brendan Sander has started his pro career. That Blue Volley Verona, a team in Italy, was close to signing Brendan Sander, and formally announced him as a new addition. So anyway, congratulations to him and the start of his pro career. I just spent time in Verona on vacation. Beautiful city. So hopefully he will have a good career there and a fun time in Verona.
There's Sounds nice.
A couple of restaurants I could recommend him, and basically all of the gelato's good. Just
whatever. Can you really go wrong with gelato in Italy?
You can. We sampled some. They like Americanize it, and it just tastes like ice cream.
Oh man, why would you do that?
I don't know, because there's dumb Americans.
More palatable to the tourist.
Dumb. All right, so let's roll right into football and a question that we did not talk about last week. Did we talk about this Gary question?
I thought we did, but that's never stopped us before.
Oh, did we already talk about this question?
I thought we did, but
oh, that's you're fine. Right. We did talk about this question. All right, sorry, Gary, you're out. Gary's out. Just deleted him. So anyway, Vanquish the Foe published an article here this week where BYU football's over/under was set at 5.5 by, I believe, the South Point Las Vegas Hotel. Okay.
Okay.
So BYU was set at 5.5. Matt, are you taking the over or the under at 5.5 wins for BYU?
I'm taking the...
It's the over.
I'm taking the under.
Stop it! All right, we're doing it. We're doing it for like the...
We're doing it. Here we go. I had to take the under because we got to do it.
Because we got to do it. All right. Game one at Arizona. Win or loss?
Loss.
We are like, I think... 17-point dog or something crazy?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I'll say that's a loss on the road to Arizona as well. So that's 0 wins. At home against Cal.
Loss.
Win. Okay. For Adam, says a win. At Wisconsin, loss.
What?
McNeese State, you think it's their first win?
Yes.
All right. I think it's their second win. At Washington, they're going to lose.
Yeah, that's a loss.
Utah State, win.
Okay, I'll give you a win there.
Hawaii, win.
Yeah.
Northern Illinois, win.
Loss.
Oy. Boise State.
Loss.
Loss. UMass.
Win.
Okay, I'm up to 6. You're at 4. New Mexico.
It's New Mexico State.
It's New Mexico State, sorry. Yes. I get a win.
You I'll get take a win.
So now I'm up to 7 wins, and then Utah.
Loss.
We win! 8! Blue goggles! I'm loving them.
I'm at 5.
You're at 5. So you really legitimately have them at under 5.5. Okay.
Yes. Sweet. Yeah, I really do. And I actually put some thought into that before you asked the question.
Okay. So Dan Roach, that's at BruteDR on Twitter, asks us, buy or sell, BYU will be bowl eligible this year, #tweetbag. Matt, you're selling that.
I am. I'm selling it. It makes me Dan. Really sad.
Okay. Well, let's skip through here for a second. Past some of these other questions, the Lawless Republic had an article where I think it was Mitch Harper. Sean Gordon. Sorry, Sean. That was not very nice. That was not very nice of me to call you Mitch Harper. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I think it's a compliment, isn't it?
It's awkward. You're just making it awkward.
Am I making it more awkward? So anyway, he references a article that was written by Street and Smith in their College Preview magazine, where they listed 5 coaches on the hot seat for this upcoming season, and had Kalani Sitake listed as one of them. Gordon goes on to basically argue that he's not really on the hot seat. At least not in the top 5, that he's got a little bit more a little bit more space there than maybe some other coaches that he mentions. So let me ask you this. Your scenario plays out when five games miss another bowl game. Okay. Does Sataki coach the team in 2019?
I think that he does.
I think that he does, even in that scenario. But I don't. I think they get to a bowl game. There's some improvement, and people are disappointed, but feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that he's got at least one more season after this.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I think the wheels would really have to come off, like, disastrously off the field or some type of, like, two-win season. Right? I think if the season ends and we've beaten UMass and McNeese State, or say three wins, even three wins, that might be dicey, because if you beat McNeese, UMass, and New Mexico State, that's a bad day. But that's not going to happen, folks. That's not going to happen.
No, I don't think
You sounded like you think that's a possibility.
It's a possibility that you lose one of those games?
No, it's a possibility that you only win three games.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
No, it isn't. Stop it. You're being
Anything's
silly.
A possibility. We lost to UMass last year.
Oh my gosh, stop it. We lost to UMass last year. It's not the same team. We don't have Ty Detmer. We will not have one of the worst offenses in the history of the program again. We just won't. Grimes has never been a part of something like that in his entire coaching career. And Detmer didn't have a coaching career, so that's very different. High school doesn't count. All right, so let's see. The other one that I thought was interesting was the Deseret News had an article about quarterbacks throughout the years and how basically it's been a revolving door. Well, it's kind of been a revolving door since Max Hall left, right?
Yeah, it's been kind of chaos for a decade.
Been chaos, okay? And so I wanted to go last time we went through all these, like, you know, starred quarterbacks and how they turned up. And let me ask you, what we're going to do this time is we're going to go from 2010 to 2017. We're going to list who the quarterbacks were in the record and whether the dumpster fire, not dumpster fire, the quarterback situation that season. Okay?
Wow, so we're taking an extreme position in the negative.
Correct. Or not.
Right.
All right.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that.
In 2010, the two quarterbacks to take a lot of snaps were Riley Nelson and Jake Heaps. The team finished 7-6. Quarterback situation, dumpster fire or not? Dumpster fire.
It was the definition of a dumpster fire. Yeah, it does not get more dumpster fiery than that.
Yes. Okay. In 2011, it's the same two quarterbacks again, Jake Heaps and Riley Nelson. This one's interesting because we finished 10-3. I'm going to say still a dumpster fire that year.
I feel like it was a little bit more under control of a dumpster fire at that point, but still a dumpster fire.
You know, obviously Heaps ends up finishing the year after Riley got hurt. So that one was interesting. 2012 finished the season 8-5. Riley Nelson, Taysom Hill, and James Lark, due to injuries to the first two guys, ends up getting in. I'm going to say not dumpster fire in 2012. Nelson was the guy. Taysom Hill was basically a change of pace guy, and Lark only plays because Nelson got hurt. But Lark played fine. I mean,
yeah, Lark actually was respectable.
Yeah. Let's see here. 2013. There's only one answer here. Taysom Hill plays the entire year. We go 8-5. That team's problem was not the quarterback.
Yeah, so, not a dumpster fire at the quarterback position.
2014, Taysom Hill, of course, gets hurt, and Christian Stewart ends up finishing out the year. The record was 8-5, not a dumpster fire. I mean, it stunk that Hill got hurt, but It wasn't terrible.
No, and Stewart was serviceable as a backup. Yeah. He wasn't.
Yeah. And kind of a cool story if you're going to have somebody come in a situation like that, you know, a senior like Stewart. We talked a lot about that season, how it was kind of cool. 2015, of course, was an interesting one. Taysom Hill ends up getting, ends up getting hurt. And then Tanner Mangum has that great start to his freshman season, 9-4 record, not a dumpster fire. I mean, it stunk that Hill got hurt, but Mangum was a serviceable quarterback throughout that season.
Yep.
2016, Taysom Hill comes back, and of course, Tanner ends up getting a little bit of time at the end due to injury. Again, I'm not going to say dumpster fire for that 9-4 season.
No, not a dumpster fire.
All right. 2017, 4-9 record. Tanner Mangum, Bo Hodge, Joe Critchlow all get significant playing time. I don't.
Coy Detmer played.
Coy Detmer did get a little bit of action as well, so they could have listed four here. Though he didn't.
Everybody
get a
got
start.
Some snaps. You get some snaps. I think I took a snap.
Well,
at quarterback
Austin
in 2017.
Kapensis took probably as many snaps as Hodge. Is that true?
Do you count probably. 4th and 19 as Linehan taking a snap at quarterback?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying.
That wasn't last year. Oh, did he do it again last year?
I'm pretty sure that he did. Didn't he do it again? Not the same situation, but I think
the
he
same
did
situation.
His own number
no,
again.
He wasn't in his own end zone. By the way, he's playing rugby again for a Utah like semi-pro rugby team.
Yeah, I saw that. They're playing a game in Texas this week.
Go Johnny Rugby.
He's the best.
I'm going to say last year was a bit of a dumpster fire in the quarterback situation.
Yeah, dumpster fire. And not, you know, and these are, it doesn't have to be somebody's doing something wrong for it to be a dumpster fire here. I'm not saying that people weren't doing something wrong last year, but some of these are just due to injury.
Well, if you have five guys take snaps at quarterback, that's not a good year.
No, something's, it's a negative situation. Yeah,
that means things are going south. So anyway, that was an article by Jeff Call talking about
that. Did I find that interesting? Of all the years that you just listed, really, only one of them does the starter play the whole season.
That has been something that has been discussed sometimes by the press recently, I think, as well, in that
you know,
there has been – and Jeff's article kind of goes into this too. There's been almost no consistency. I mean, Hill played, what, parts of four seasons at BYU and only had one season that he finished, okay? Mangum's been hurt. You know, you've had those years with Nelson and Heaps and Lark where we couldn't keep anybody healthy, and there were quarterback controversies, specifically, of course, the one between Riley Nelson and Jake Heaps. I mean, it has been – we're going to go through some other years here. BYU had a remarkable run from the 80s – to the early 90s, and then from, you know, between, and then had, you know, basically 5 years of John Beck and Max Hall. And, and you know, we just haven't been able to, we can't get a quarterback to play two seasons in a row, right? We can't even get a quarterback to finish a season.
Yeah, it's insane, right? And you know, you can look at the season, the Tanner Mangum's Miracle Bowl, and all this with, you know, does that count as a full season? And I'd argue it doesn't because you don't get any of the preseason snaps as the starter and all that.
It's close though. That one's close.
Yeah, but they prepped for that whole season with Taysom as.
Oh, that's true. That's true. The whole entire offseason.
Turn on a dime, right?
Yep, they had to turn on a dime. And but, as we can see, Robert and I may be better at turning on a dime than the most recent coaching staff.
Did you have to do that? Does it have to be like that?
It's important because we're going to get to something here in a minute, and I think I'm going to make a point that I've made before, but with some underlying evidence that, you know, coaching might matter at the collegiate level.
Coaching matters.
Hey, every time we say this, anytime anybody says it, you get this group of fans that start screaming about how it's all on the players. Like, and it's a ridiculous argument because you know, you can just go to Navy. Well, obviously the players are disciplined and everybody says that. Well, Navy has been terrible most of my lifetime. Okay? They're not recruiting, quote-unquote, different players now. They're getting the same guys, right? And you might even say it's probably harder for them now than it was 20 years ago. And, you know, coaching matters, right? It just does. And we'll get into that here in a second. So another cool article that was in the Deseret News this week was by Jay Yeomans talking about the most accurate passers in BYU football history. So basically, he took by completion percentage 1 through 10, okay? And I'm going to say very quickly the list. Gary Scheide was 10. Kevin Federick at 9. Surprising that Federick was in the top 10?
Yeah, that's surprising.
Okay. Jim McMahon was at 8. Brandon Doman at 7. John Beck at 6. Ty Detmer at 5. Robbie Bosco, 4. Steve Young, 3. Max Hall, 2. And Steve Sarkisian, you know, your favorite, as the most accurate passer. So it's hard to argue with what Jay said, because basically what you're looking at is career completion percentage, right? I mean, that's a measure of accuracy. I was curious, though, where they ranked nationally. So compared to their peers, how accurate were they, right? And that's not a perfect way to do it either. But it does kind of, like, for example, in the 80s, to be a 65% passer was really remarkable. And in the top 20, you had some people below 60%. And now you'll have, in some college seasons in the last 10 or 15 years, you'll have multiple quarterbacks throw for more than 70%, right, in a season. So I was just curious. So I went every year from 1979 till now, and it was fascinating to look at where these quarterbacks were. And for example, you know, Hall was in the top 10 twice, Max Hall was, but he was never in the top like 3 or 4, as opposed to Ty Detmer, who was second twice. Steve Young, who was the most accurate passer in 1983 at 71.3%.
Yikes.
Hard to argue with that season. McMahon, though he was way down on this list, was first and fourth in his two seasons as a starter. John Walsh broke the top 20 twice. Sarkisian was the most accurate passer in 1996. Not a big surprise. Federick was a top 15 passer twice. Hall was 12th and 3rd in his 2 years starting. And I mean, Beck was 12th and 3rd in his 2 years starting. So I just found it fascinating that if you look at it, you know, I'm not bagging on Jay's list, but if you look at it compared to their peers, Sarkisian is probably still the most accurate passer ever. But you got to put Detmer pretty close. He finished 2nd twice. You got to bump Hall down maybe a little bit. But obviously he was a very accurate passer. But here's the point I was going to make before. In 1986, Matt, Steve Lindsley was 8th in the country in completion percentage. In 1987, Sean Covey was 6th. Okay? And Sean Covey ended up losing his starting job in 1988. Of course, late in the year to Ty Detmer. So, freshman Ty Detmer. So let me pose this to you. Steve Lindsley and Sean Covey are not considered ever among the elite BYU quarterbacks, nor should they be, right? But they both had seasons where they finished top 10 in the country in completion percentage and top 20 in the country in yards per pass attempt. And those are two things that BYU has not done, either of those, since Max Hall graduated. It was just amazing to me. I guess the point I'm trying to make is Lindsley and Covey, because of the awesome system that was in place, were they as good as Bosco and Young or as good as Detmer would end up becoming? Absolutely not. They weren't as good quarterbacks, but they were serviceable and plugged into the right system. The team still won a fair amount of games, and they put up really good numbers. And that's what we got to get back to.
So you're trying to say coaching matters?
Yeah, I am trying to say that.
And the system makes a difference?
Yeah, and Tim Jacobson in the email in the tweet bag last week had asked a question about accuracy. I think Tim's got a really good point, which is we need a quarterback that is accurate, right? We need a quarterback that can complete 65% of his passes this year. Whoever it is that's named quarterback, you know, and you don't have to do that if you're Taysom Hill and you can run for 1,000 yards a year, right? But if you're not going to be that,
if you're not going to do that, you need to complete the passes.
You need to complete the passes. You know, and that's been a big problem for BYU in the past. It's really sad to say, but it's now like seven or eight seasons. That's a lot of seasons without an accurate passer.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, that is sad. Anyway. So Matt, last week we also did not get to a question that Chase Blyle asked in the tweet bag. And by the way, if you want to jump on in the tweet bag, hashtag jump on, climb on in. It's not jump on in. Should be jump on in. That's
depends. It depends what phrase you want to use. I mean, that's up to you. Some people like to say climb on in. Some people like to say jump on in.
I think jumping on in would be more dangerous because you could miss.
Or you might, who knows, like, unless you have a good look. Yeah, what does the landing space look like?
If Chase, for example, climbed on in before you and you jumped on in, you'd land on the poor guy.
Yeah, that's not a good situation for Chase.
He seems like a decent fellow. So Chase asked this week a question that I have no answer for, which was about baseball and some chaos with the baseball program. Don't know anything. Sorry, Chase. Matt, anything to add on baseball?
I have nothing to add to what you just said.
All right, so Chase last week asked a question we didn't get to, and that's at Chase Blyle on Twitter. He said, hashtag tweetbag, about the BYU-Utah rivalry, whose fans are more obnoxious? Well, that's easy. Utah fans, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, can we say anything different? It's a BYU podcast, guys.
That's true. All right, so he says, I'm beginning to suspect that all sports fans in Utah are obnoxious.
You might be onto something here, Chase.
Every time I read that phrase, I have a hard time not giggling. What is it like among rivalries in Louisiana and Minnesota? Isn't that where y'all live? That is correct. He says, I don't feel like his home of Virginia, and Matt, you used to live in Northern Virginia, rivalries are near this bad. So let's break down his question. We'll get back to whose fans are more obnoxious at the end. The questions I'm parsing out are Utah fans, sports fans in general, more obnoxious than, say, the average sports fan, Matt?
No.
I think the answer is actually yes, and I'll get back to why here in a second. But I think they actually are, but maybe not to an extreme degree. But maybe not. So what are rivalries like in Louisiana? Is there anything hot? I mean, LSU, their rivalries are out of state, right?
Yeah, but everybody drives all these games. I mean, it's...
But is it acrimonious between them and any SEC school?
Like, acrimonious?
Do they hate each other?
What are you talking about? Acrimonious? You're going to use a word like acrimonious?
Oh, my gosh. Why do you do this when I use good vocabulary?
Oh, my gosh. Acrimonious? Is it acrimonious? Well, I don't know. Are you feeling acrimonious?
Oh my gosh, you're an idiot. Just because you struggle with big words doesn't mean the rest of us do.
I will say this. The proximity causes the dynamic to work a little bit differently. But do I believe that LSU fans hate Nick Saban and Alabama in a way that is less obnoxious or less visceral than the way that Utah and BYU feel about each other? No. Now, it's just there aren't a lot of Alabama fans around, right? And you know, it's funny though, is every time I see somebody wearing an Alabama shirt, I always give them a Roll Tide. I really don't even like Alabama. I just think it's fun. I just
Roll
like to
Tide.
Spit the fire a little bit. Roll Tide.
Is that like when every time I meet somebody that went to Ohio State, I said, oh, the Ohio State?
Oh, I give them an OH.
Oh, I just say, the. And if somebody from Ohio State says, I went to Ohio State, I always correct them. No, you went to the Ohio State. I'm that obnoxious. So in Minnesota, there's only one state. school, right, with the University of Minnesota that plays the D1 sports. The rivalry is kind of with Wisconsin, and there is kind of a whole state rivalry, not just revolving around the sports teams in the universities, but just in general, there's kind of a thing between Minnesota and Wisconsin. But it's not really a thing. Like, the people are too nice in both of those states to really make anything.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Nobody's really getting... It's more like who has the better cheese, and would you rather go to...
We all know the answer to that question.
Would you... It's Wisconsin. Sorry, Minnesota. Yeah. Would you rather go to a lake in Wisconsin or Minnesota? And that's the reverse. It's Minnesota.
Yeah, that's... I can see that one going the other way.
You know, and you know... The weather's about the same, all those kind of things. So it's not the same. So that's why I say with Utah, maybe they aren't worse than the average sports fan, but I have now lived for more than a decade in two states where the sports fans are pretty relaxed, right? Like, for example, I did not see any of my Timberwolves or Milwaukee Bucks fans tweeting about how, and I saw several Jazz fans that probably also listen to the show who were saying, well, you know, the Jazz would have beat the Cavaliers or Celtics in five if they were in the East.
Oh boy.
Okay, and it's just like kind of these like over the top where you're like, I don't know, that LeBron guy's pretty good. They might have had some troubles.
He's above average.
He is definitely above average. So, and I don't know about Virginia, you live
there's
there.
No, like, real hardcore, like, think about the schools and the rivalries we just mentioned. I can't even come up with a good parallel out of Virginia. You know, I'm thinking about, like, maybe old school Georgetown basketball, but that's DC, right? And I'm UVA and Virginia Tech, not so much. No, I just don't know that there's just not a good parallel there.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. We grew up in Massachusetts. The Yankees-Red Sox rivalry is really overblown nationally by the media, right?
Right, right.
But I will tell you this. As a 12-year-old coming out of Yankee Stadium with my Red Sox hat on, I had probably about eight beers poured on me on my way out of there after the Yankees won.
I think that's 12. Illegal. Isn't that illegal?
So I took before I got in the car, we drove back to Massachusetts. I was wringing the beer out of my shirt before I got into our brother's car. So that's why I say maybe worse than average, but it's not at the
level. I don't know. That's what they did to Max Hall's family.
Well, that's true. Well, but let me get to my point here with two things, two examples. The first example is every time at a Jazz game they throw a kid with a BYU jersey or hat on, they get booed. And I find that pathetic, quite frankly, of the Utah fans. Like, that's just pathetic. Like, you can't boo a six-year-old ever, right? Like, ever. You can't make the poor kid cry in front of 20,000 people. That's just
what's wrong with you?
But BYU is also the place where against St. Mary's, now granted, it was an atrociously officiated game. The game had to be stopped for throwing stuff on the court. And you and I have both sat in football games where you just sat there shaking your head when the student section said a lot of dumb things about either the officiating or when they booed Kevin Federick. I remember I was working as a reporter at the time thinking, oh my gosh, like I just went through. Federick, he was a pretty decent player. He wasn't a great player, but he was the best option of the team, and he definitely didn't deserve to get booed.
Top 10 completion percentage of all time. I mean, that's not bad.
It's not nothing. It's not nothing. So I go that to say I think the Utah fans are more obnoxious, but a lot of that has to do with alcohol, quite frankly.
Well, and I think some of it has to do with you know, and maybe we're going to get, I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but I think some of this also has to do with the way that Utah fans and BYU fans choose to interact with one another, right? Like, when somebody posts, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, somebody posted information about the way a BYU player performs at a pro day. And you go with, and the responses to that are at least 50% Utah fans. It's like, why are you even talking about this? It's very strange. You know, I don't know that component. Maybe I'm just because I'm not in the thick of these other rivalries that we discussed. I don't know that is as played out in some of these other places.
I think it strikes me as very strange.
I think it is like Alabama Auburn. I've heard friends of mine that are in that rivalry that on their opposing message boards that happens a lot. I don't know about some of the other ones on the West Coast, like UCLA and USC. I don't know if that type of stuff happens at all. But I agree with you. It is bizarre to me that almost every time our podcast is posted on DeseretNews.com, there's almost always ends up being three or four comments back and forth between BYU and Utah fans arguing not about our podcast but about some random thing that I have in the intro. Right? Or the headline of the podcast. And I find that weird that a Utah fan would comment on the podcast, not because they listen to the podcast, which would also be weird, but basically because they want to start a flame war with a BYU fan. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not how I would spend my emotional energy as a sports fan.
Ever. I ain't got time for that.
I ain't got time for that. So in case you were wondering, though, I did a little research. Western Carolina University professor David Tyler and a colleague of his, Joe Cobbs, out of Northern Kentucky, did an actual study to figure out about the intensity of rivalries. And they were specifically NCAA football bold subdivision rivalries. Okay. So this was done, I think, 2013, 2014 is when they gathered the data, so it's a few years old. But they surveyed 5,300 college football fans of all 122 FBS teams, asking questions about their favorite teams, their rivals, their feelings about their rivals and their fans, and their thoughts about what contributes to those rivalries. So they basically created rivalry points. Basically you could allocate your rivalry points to other teams. Okay. So, so in a lot of cases, for example, I would guess that back when we were in the Mountain West, if they had done this, like half of the rivalry points overall in the total Mountain West would have gone to us, right? To BYU.
Right.
But in this case, if you look at where the research landed, Utah fans and BYU fans very clearly see the other one as their rival. And this was, a few years ago. The highest a rivalry could be is 200. It would be 100% of each points, right? And the BYU-Utah rivalry was at like 150, which ranked it the fourth most intense rivalry in the country behind Arizona, Arizona State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Toledo and Bowling Green, which, by the way, I didn't know that was a thing.
Apparently that's pretty heated.
Yes. But I find it fascinating. I know BYU fans don't like to say this, but more BYU fans ranked Utah as their rival than Utah fans ranked BYU. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with the Pac-12. Moving to the Pac-12.
But I'll tell you what all those BYU fans are going to tell you is it's the Utah fans refusing to admit that we're their rival. They're going to, when they're asked this question on a poll, they're going to do whatever they can to not say
they're
going to
say Colorado.
Yeah, they're rigging it. They're gimmering this thing like we did with whatever that poll was a long time ago. And that's what all the BYU fans are going to tell you. But I think you're right. I think this does point to the fact that Utah is, playing a whole different set of teams year after year, and creating some rivalries there.
But that being said, a ton of Utah fans, it was almost 80% of BYU fans had them as their rival, and it was 70% of Utah fans had BYU.
Yeah, it's not.
Rival.
It was still high enough that.
Yeah,
we were
super
high. The number four rivalry in the country, folks.
The other ones on this list are Western Michigan and Central Michigan, Clemson and South Carolina, UNLV and Nevada. I wouldn't have probably picked that one, but it's not actually that surprising.
Yeah, but if you're UNLV, who else are you going to list?
And Nevada too, right? Oklahoma, Texas, Indiana and Purdue, which we've both had a piece of that one.
Yeah, but let's think about it. Can I just use that? I mean, we used this example before, but every time Purdue scores a touchdown in any game all season, they yell, IU sucks.
Yes, yes, they do.
But multiple times a game. It's not every time they score a touchdown. Sorry, I was crossing wires with Georgia Tech, because Georgia Tech sings a song with a line "To hell with Georgia" in it every time they score. Every time they score a touchdown.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing: there are, you know, all the jokes that you make about the BYU Utah rivalry, like, you know, how do you get a University of Utah guy off your porch?
Paying for the pizza,
right? It's the same. The same jokes are told by Purdue students about Indiana. Right,
and half the schools on this list.
Yeah, for sure. So next was Louisville, Kentucky. Then it was Mississippi State and Ole Miss, UCF and USF, Duke and UNC. And again, this is just football, okay? UCLA and USC, though, that one was heavily tilted towards UCLA fans, thinking it more of the rivalry than USC fans. Auburn and Alabama, as we mentioned before, but only. We're only talking about 50% of each fan base considers them their top rivalry. That was surprising to me. You mentioned Virginia and Virginia Tech. And then my favorite, okay, Cal Stanford's at the bottom of this list. My favorite was Oregon and Oregon State, because 80% of Oregon State fans see Oregon as their primary rival, and only like 15% of Oregon fans see Oregon State as their primary rival.
That's the ultimate right there. That's like the ultimate snub.
It's like my favorite quote from what is the tennis player, Andy
Roddick.
Andy Roddick. I saw an interview with him, and he was, every time he got beat by Roger Federer in, you know, in these finals and different tournaments and everything, and he got asked about if, you know, how did he feel about the rivalry with Roger Federer, and Andy Roddick said, "Well, I think I'd have to actually beat him once for it to be called a rivalry."
But you know what's great is you look at the Oregon fans that didn't say Oregon State are just seething because of the next one on this list,
which is
Stanford Cal.
Yeah, Stanford Cal. Yeah.
You know, so what that's telling you is that like something like 45% of Stanford fans said Cal, right, and didn't say Oregon.
Yeah. It's interesting. So obviously this is a slightly dated study, and it doesn't actually get exactly.
It doesn't take
to
a
what
temperature either, right? I mean, Chase, it doesn't tell you. It doesn't say how many of those BYU fans that said Utah like won't allow anything the color red in their house, right? I mean, what is the there's a temperature component to this.
Well, and my test of a rivalry is always this. Okay. Especially when it comes to collegiate sports. And you know the answer to this from our house. Would you let your kid go to that university? Like, what is your initial emotional reaction to your kid comes into the bedroom and says, "I think I'm going to go to the University of Utah to school." Now, if you live in Utah, that's a very different scenario than somebody in Louisiana and Minnesota, right? Because now I got to pay out-of-state tuition for that place. But same with, say, Auburn, Alabama. Same with Oregon State, Oregon, right? What would the reaction be? And that's a way, I think, to get the intensity. Or would you date somebody that went to that school? Like,
Well, I wouldn't now because I'm married. That would be weird.
I get that, but I'm just saying, like, when I was single, one time somebody asked me two things. Like, "Well, you're a big baseball fan, a Red Sox fan. Would you marry a Yankees fan?" And I said no. That was my initial. Now I backed off it when I said, "Well, maybe."
They poured beer on me. I hate everything about them. They're glassless. Their whole organization.
And you get a bunch of beer poured on you, and your brother's about ready to fight every last one of them, and his girlfriend is trying to convince him not to fight everyone as we're leaving the stadium. Which really the lesson is: don't wear your Red Sox hat to Yankee Stadium.
You guys got to do all the cool stuff.
Yeah, Jeff Reardon gave up a home run to Mel Hall. I still remember it. Red Sox were winning. Yeah, terrible game. I think that is a way to judge the intensity of a rivalry.
But, so- But you'd have to go poll, you know, the 80-something percent of BYU fans that said Utah and ask them that secondary question.
Yeah, yeah. Would you date someone or would you let your kid go to that school? And the answer to me, you know, has changed as I've gotten older. But not much.
Well, I think that in college, I would have dated somebody from the University of Utah. Do you believe that that's true?
Yes, I believe you would have done that. Yes, I don't believe I would have done that.
And then I'd say today, if a child of mine came in and said, I'm going to go to the University of Utah, I think I'd just shrug my shoulders. Okay.
I'd have some big questions as to why. I don't think I'd just shrug my shoulders.
I'd be more comfortable with one of my children going to the University of Utah than one of my children going to IU, to be honest.
To Indiana University?
I would rather, if I had to choose between those two schools, I would rather send a child to the U than to IU.
Why? IU's
a good school. It's crazy because IU's a good school.
Yeah, yeah. I almost went there for business school and chose Purdue over it.
It is what it is, Mangum.
I made a good choice is what I did. I made the right choice. But, I mean, here's the bottom line for me with this rivalry stuff.
I don't know that I really feel that way, by the way, but whatever.
To get back to Chase's question is, I have no patience for any of the rivalry stuff that goes beyond sports, right? If you want to say, you know, ridiculous things that Utah sucks and BYU sucks or whatever back and forth, that's just, you know, normal sport fan banter, right? But when you boo the little kid at the Jazz games, when you start throwing stuff on the court, when you, you know, when fans walking out of your stadium from an opposing team have basically had a terrible time and never want to come back to your stadium, you know, I mean, you had an experience like that at Arizona. I had a few friends that did when they went to Boise State as a BYU fan, You know, I've seen it. I saw it at Purdue a couple times with some of Purdue's rivals coming out. I just don't have much of a patience for that garbage. People should be able to go to the opposing team. You can boo each other or whatever else as adults, not children. But after that, it's got to end, right? There's got to be a line where you just say, it's over now. And, you know, we're not going to take it to the next level of berating people, pouring beer on them, you know, cussing them out, and
yelling stuff at children. I mean, it's just,
yeah. And any BYU fan that engage in that kind of behavior, and I know there are some, cause I've seen it, are, you know, as far as I are concerned, it's just as terrible as anything. It doesn't matter what color you're wearing and what letters on your hat.
At some point, we've all got to just grow up a little bit, yeah. Right? I mean, it's just sports. These are supposed to be fun, you know. I think that you go run down this list. I think there's 17 rivalries listed here. They've all got obnoxious pieces of their history on both sides, where people probably have taken even Toledo Bowling Green, which I'm not even sure I knew was a thing either.
We don't live in Ohio.
You know, that crazy, stupid behavior or whatever,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
By and large, I think most of the fans of any of these schools that I'm – because I've got friends, just like anybody who looks at this list of schools, you know, they got friends and relatives or whatever that went to a lot of these places. And I think most of the people I know are kind of feel the same way. Like, you know what? Yeah, like, I hate Michigan, but, like, I'm not going to pour beer on somebody.
Right, right. You know, and hate me is not true hate, right? It's a more of a, you know, I don't want to say a fun hate because that seems like.
No, but there should be some banter. There should be some little bit of heat on it. But, you know, just like a good salsa.
Yeah.
Like, don't ruin the flavor.
I don't know if it's gotten worse in Utah because you and I haven't lived in Utah for a long time. I had a lot of University of Utah fans after I graduated BYU and I was working as a young professional. And it was always cordial, right? Like we'd make bets on the game or we'd, you know, rip each other because of a tough loss or something. And it was always just kind of fun. You know what I mean? And, you know, and I've had some University of Utah fans outside, though that's not as common once you start moving around the country. But still cordial. So I don't know if it's gotten worse or better or whatever else, but in the end, to me, the rivalries cease to be fun when things get stupid.
You know, I'll just say this. I think my experience by and large, especially since I graduated college, and I don't know what if I want to say since I left Utah, because you know, you tend to grow up a little bit, right? And so some of this is a time issue, not just geography. But my interaction with Utah fans since I left Provo, I haven't been really tremendously negative. I mean, I took a Utah fan. I ended up with tickets to a NCAA tournament game in Houston a few years ago, and Utah was playing, and I took a Utah fan because I knew right. We wanted to go see the game, and I had good seats. You know, and I've had friends and wards and even friends that weren't affiliated with the church that were from Salt Lake or whatnot, or, you know, or were Utah fans that I've interacted with and not had really much of a negative experience with any of these people.
Right.
So I'm not ready to call out an entire fan base on one side or the other, just because I'm not sitting in the lion's den of this rivalry. Right. Correct. Just because of where I live.
Well, and the only fan base I'll do that to is San Diego State. I'm totally kidding.
Well, let's be honest. They'd probably deserve it.
Maybe Cal.
Stanford.
Wyoming.
Don't
okay.
even get me started.
I was on a tirade the other night about the symbol of U. Okay. The U symbol that the University of Miami uses. Have I done this rant on this podcast?
Probably, but go ahead.
I think it's the dumbest thing. They're the University of Miami. It should be an M. Everything is the university. Everybody can flash a U. Like, at least the University of Utah has Utah, right? But anytime I see them do that stupid U, it's on their helmet, I'm just like, why is it a U? Why is it a U?
I don't
Everybody's
understand.
A U, right?
Yeah.
Except for the academies and Boston College. Like, every FBS team has university in their name, right? Like, I don't get it. It's dumb. And I like making fun of the University of Miami, too, because, I don't know, it's just fun. I don't actually have anything against them. Well, Matt, if you wanted to join, climb on in the tweet bag. I didn't even complete this because we got into the people crushing Chase in the tweet bag thing. You can do it on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, on the Instagram now at BYU_RiseShout, and do it via email. Like Tim did, which is riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, one word. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. We're going to be off next week, so we'll be back in 2 weeks with probably, like, you know, guessing what they're going to talk about on Media Day or something. And I'm sure there'll be other news and other things. And sometime this month, maybe in this next one, we're going to do all-time BYU greats casted as superheroes. Or vice versa. I don't know if I said that right.
I'm not sure what that would look like, vice versa, but I can't wait to do it.
Yeah. So we're going to match, you know, who these all-time greats were to a superhero. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Making it more hard to understand.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do. That's my
You're that's obfuscating my the...
I'm sorry, did you just use a big word?
Huh. I'm trying to come up with big, stupid words to use just to give you a hard time.
You don't need to be acrimonious about your lack of vocabulary.
Acrimonious.
All right.
I'm very acrimonious.
All right. Well, thank you all for downloading and listening. You can find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. We would recommend that you subscribe on iTunes or whatever other podcast service you might use. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.